The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Well, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Believe You Me podcast. Do not fear. It is just not me sitting in a dentist waiting room. No, I'm here in my house. We have the builders here. They're making tons of noise at the house, at the front of the house. So I've had to move to the back of the house or a little relocate. But I got to say, I kind of like it. I like this backdrop. It's a little bit different. Today, we have special guest Tom Aspinall will be joining us. But of course, we have Brian McKay and we have the one and only Mike Harrington. Harrington, show yourself, please.
I've shown myself.
I specifically said last time to try and get better light. It seems that you misunderstood the instruction and you got less light. What is going on?
So I'm wearing a white shirt. I thought you meant wear lighter clothing. I got the memo wrong. So yeah, I do have lights ordered for Monday.
Oh my God. It's just getting darker and darker. Like your soul, like my spirit, like the believer's enthusiasm. Oh my God. How are you, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty all right. And you know what? I would argue with you, Mike, about the believer's enthusiasm simply because of how many times I've been getting tagged in Spotify Wrapped this year, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen this? The 2021 rap?
I have seen it because I still don't know what it is because I'm not down with the kids, if you will, with the apps and the schmaps and whatever. So, but I keep seeing on Twitter, number one podcast, whatever. And I see so many and there's a lot of people and thank you very much. But what does that mean? Does that mean that we're their number one podcast?
Yeah, so Spotify just sends you stats at the end of the year for what you've been listening to most. And yeah, I think, you know, the people who've been tagging, Believe You Me, myself, you, Brian, you know, other former co-hosts not to be named, they have been getting tagged a lot because, you know, it's been saying, hey, you've listened to this many hours of the Believe You Me podcast this year, which is pretty cool to me.
It is cool to me as well. So, okay, all right, well, let's have a look. I'll go on my phone and you go on your phone because if you go to that, you can go to, where is it? Okay, your top songs 2021, right? Click on that. Right, this could be very embarrassing. What do you have? What's your number one song of 2021?
Dude, so it's super hand jobby because the only time I ever listen to music...
What?
The only time I ever listen to music is when I'm like running and I want to listen to, you know, the stuff I would walk out to if I was fighting. So
Eye of the Tiger.
No, it's even worse. Devil's Gonna Come by Raphael Lake.
I don't know that song at all. It sounds good. My number one song, no one knows, Queen of the Stone Age, which is surprising to me.
I'm trying to think how's that one go?
Still?
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm just discovering like all the music. I just got into that recently. I heard it on I've known the song for a long time. That's an old song, but I heard it on TV recently. I was like, oh shit, I forgot about that song. And it's just been rotating on my Spotify playlist. Number two on mine is a classic 80s one. But again, to use your expression, super hand jobby. It's a great song though. Alive and Kicking by Simple Minds.
Okay.
Well, that's like number two.
You're pretty upbeat. I have Don't Tell Me How to Live by Monster Truck.
I do not know these people or these bands. And there's no way that these are my top songs. There's just no fucking way. Number three, far behind, Candlebox. It's like a fucking 90s reunion here.
Well, I mean, all right, so here's the thing. If you listen to your Spotify for Music like four times this year and you listen to that one time, that would somehow make the cut.
Yeah. Well, I don't listen to it a lot, but when I do, it's always the light songs. I just do that as the playlist. You know what I mean? Because Spotify, they have the made for you, don't they? You know what I mean? Or Discover Weekly. And you click on them. And I got to be honest, most of it is a lot of shit. Terrible choice of music. And then I've got Once in a Lifetime by Talking Heads, which is a great song, but again, would it be one of my top songs of 2021? And then coming in at number six, Blur, Song 2. There we go. Trip Down Memory Lane. What are your top fives, Harrington? Quickly go.
Just to round it off, 99 Problems, a Jay-Z cover by a guy named Hugo. Cadence to Arms by the Dropkick Murphys.
Okay.
Bagpipes for you to start your run. And then Feel It Still by Portugal the Man.
Now, it seems like your music is certainly in this millennium as opposed to mine being in the 80s and the 90s.
Mine's all just death metal.
Give me your number one. Brian, we're going to bring you in on this. Give me your top three, see if I recognize any of them.
They are literally all from the same band and on the same album this year. It's August Burns Red, The Frost, Lifeline, and Hero of the Half-Truth. That
and
is
what's
my
the
top
band?
Three songs. August Burns Red.
August Burns Red. Okay, yeah. And that's like hardcore thrash metal, is it?
Yeah, they are heavy as fuck.
I don't like it. I can't get into it. But still, hey, horses for courses. No judgment, of course.
I like them simply because of their music videos. Like their music videos look like old school anime.
They're very fun.
Yeah, but hold on a minute. Can we talk about the music videos in the United States of America? What is the fucking deal? You guys make them all, right? You revolutionized it with MTV. You make these amazing, elaborate videos. In the UK, which I was just back, I love it because like on a Saturday morning, I would put on just like one of the many, many music channels that you have. Because like say you're cleaning your house or you're just getting ready for something. You have nothing you want to put on, but you just put on one of the many music channels. In the UK, there's about 15 channels dedicated to music videos, right? And you can, whatever type of music you want. You want hip-hop, you want R&B, you want some rock, you want this, you want pop music, you want 80s, 90s. Excuse me. There's a channel designated to that and it'll have popular music on there and it will play the fucking videos. When I moved to America, and I think we've had this conversation before, you cannot play the music videos out here. The only place you can find the music videos is if you go to YouTube. And people always say, oh, you go to MTV. No, you go to MTV and it is shitty reality TV shows. I don't get it.
Yeah, so they've added like MTV2, MTV3, MTV4.
No.
I'm telling you, it's because that's like they just made too much content and they have like specific channels that are like super deep on your cable package for just the music videos. But I guess people just like watching like the Jersey Shore and all that crap more than they like basic music videos.
No, but some of these music videos are amazing. They spend millions of dollars on them, but they don't get seen. I just don't understand it. I mean, obviously they have a monetary value. That's why they do it. And that's why they spend so much money, but they don't show them on TV anymore. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, you know, at this point, you can cut out the middleman. You know, if you really want to see that video, you go to YouTube. And there's a reason it has 500 million views or whatever it is on YouTube. Yeah. Because, you know, that's way more than it would play on MTV.
I love living in America. Okay, I do. I have a great life here. It truly is the land of opportunity. And I say that all the time. However, I'm going to say this. It's fucking better to watch music videos in the UK. We got about 15 channels fucking dedicated to that shit. If you want to chase your dreams, you want to make something of yourself, you want to go from a nothing to somebody, no better place to do it in the world than America. However, if you're just fucking looking to browse through some top of the range music videos, you got to go to the UK and fuck the USA for that one. But anyway, still don't unfollow the podcast based upon that, Brian. Yes.
Is Top of the Pops still a thing?
Top of the Pops is not still a thing. No, that ended a long, long time ago. Anyway, quick update before we get Tom Aspinall on. The reason I'm here in one part of the Half Mansion is because we have some building work going on outside. You're right. Stay on, Brian Harrington. We're having some construction work done. Well, not construction. It started off with having the house painted. Okay, we've lived there for 10 years. We've given some attention to the inside, but we forgot about the outside. You know what I mean? And after a bit, now it's all starting to look a little bit tatty. There's chips off, the paint's worn, the sun's beating down on it every day. It just looks crap. You know what I mean? You got to keep up with the Joneses, unfortunately. So we got a decorator team in to give us an estimate on painting it all. That came in and I shit my pants, but still, whatever. It was very, very expensive. Paint. That much, but I was wrong. They've been here for weeks and they're prepping and all the rest of it. But when they started doing that, they found problems. Okay, they found termite damage to a lot of the wood. So we have a balcony off my master bedroom that's all destroyed. They got to rebuild that. They got to So we got tons of work going on. We got tons of hammering and painting and banging and drilling and all kinds of shit. Hence, I am in this part of the house. There it is. Deal with it.
Cool, cool, cool. I mean, that is, Mike, you, like, it's the definition of, like, you ever read that book as a kid, like, Give a Mouse a Muffin?
I've never heard of it, but I like it. It's a great title. Go ahead.
So, like, the concept is you can't give a mouse a muffin because then he's going to want a glass of milk. And then if you give him a glass of milk, he's going to want, like, a bed to sleep in. And it's, like, you know, it's a whole book about, like, just the added problems you have from just giving this mouse a muffin to begin with. And it's, like, that as a I worked as a contractor for 10 years. I can tell you, anytime you try to do, like, one project like that, you're essentially redoing your whole house.
It started with a paint job, and it's gone from a paint job now to having fucking every piece of wood fixed. We're getting new doors now because we're like, well, we're doing all this. We might as well get new doors. And now Rebecca's talking about redoing all the paving work outside, leading up the garden path and all that stuff. I'm like, oh, my God.
There's so much.
Where does this end? And talking of giving a mouse a muffin, I think I'm offending them every time. Not that I'm calling the workmen mice. But when I was a workman, because I used to be a builder. Well, a builder's laborer. I used to mix the concrete and all that type of shit. I would love it when the people that own the house, they would make a cup of tea, they would do some sandwiches, they would give us a Kit Kat and things like that. Do you know what I mean? It was great. It was the best part of the day. I keep going out there and saying to them, hey, you guys need some water? Would you like a cup of tea? Would you like a coffee or whatever? They haven't said yes once. And Rebecca has told me to stop offering them because I'm offending them. And I'm like, I'm just trying to give a mouse a muffin. Come on, what are you talking about? I'm like, babe, when I was in that position, you like to be offered drinks. So I think tomorrow I'm gonna go down to Tempo because they're all, you know, of a Mexican descent. I'm gonna get them. I'm gonna treat them to some good tacos, I think. Or is that a little too stereotypical?
No, I'm just like, I love that you're like, oh yeah, you're not gonna take a coffee from me? How about this? Tacos. Try to say no. Try to say no.
We'll keep it in your lane. Oh shit. All right, let's just hear from our newest sponsor, Shopify.com. Listen, if you're sitting there and you've got a business, an online business, or maybe you want to get online because you want to access the marketplace that is the entire world, then you need to be online. Now, for a lot of people, creating an online store or an e-commerce store, whichever way you want to call it, that sounds very, very hard. But with Shopify.com, it becomes very, very easy because Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business. So startups and upstarts and establishes businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. I mean, listen, you know, trying to find the ways to sell things online is very hard. You know, you got to find the professionals, you got to pay a ton of money. Shopify makes it all very, very easy. And I love how Shopify has the tools and the resources that, as I said, make it easy for any business to succeed from down the street to around the globe. Like mine, Shopify powers over 1.7 million businesses from first scale to full scale. You can reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integration and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. And it is more than a store. Shopify grows with you. This is a possibility powered by Shopify. Listen, if you're trying to have an online store, if you want to expand your marketplace, your business, Shopify is the way that's going to make this really, really simple and cost effective for you. So go to shopify.com/believe, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/believe right now. Shopify.com/believe. Shopify is more than a store. Connect with your customers, drive sales, and manage your day-to-day business. Shopify.com/believe. Okay, where were we? Anyway, I do believe Tom Aspinall is just about to join us. So, Harrington, get the hell out of here. I'm going to chat to heavyweight prospect, my good friend, Mr. Tom Aspinall, live from Wigan, but looking like, I don't know, it looks like Wigan in the background. It looks like somewhere very, very exotic. Is that your wallpaper, Tom?
This is my wallpaper. This is my lovely lady's handiwork, putting the wallpaper up. I just, like the alpha male I am, Mike, I just sat back and watched.
Well, that's what you do. No. I like it. By the way, I'm not talking shit. I like that. That's some beautiful wallpaper. No, it is.
I agree.
Did you hang that yourself or did you get a pro? Because I can't see any joins.
No, my missus did it. My wife did it. She put it all up. She did it. I just sat back and just admired it. I didn't do a lot.
Now, hold on. A moment ago, you said you were an alpha male. What kind of alpha male stands about and lets his wife hang the bloody wallpaper? Certainly in this day and age, I mean, I get it, you know, equal opportunities and all the rest of it. But surely a chivalrous old school gentleman like yourself would have said, no, sweetheart, you sit down, have a cup of tea, leave the wallpaper hanging to the professionals.
No, it's the other way around. The alpha male lets the woman do everything and just sits back and controls the scene. That's what I was doing, Mike. I was just managing the operations. You know what I mean? I was just managing it. Just put a bit higher on that side, a bit higher on this side, and she did a good job. Anyway, it looks all right.
It looks absolutely fantastic. But anyway, we're not here to discuss the ins and outs of interior design and whether or not men or women should be decorated. We're here to discuss all things martial arts, mixed martial arts. Tom Aspinall's mixed martial arts. Tom, I believe. We have a fight booking. I'm not sure if you can't talk about it, that's fine, but can you talk about it?
We do have a fight booking, but unfortunately, Mike, you know the rules. You know the rules as well as I do. I can confirm that I have a fight booked, but I cannot really confirm when.
Well, that's where, fucking pointless coming on a podcast then.
It's all UK guys are getting mad on the same show. So if the rumours are out there, the rumours may or may not be true. But I do have a fight.
All right. Okay. Can we discuss where the fight's going to be?
Apparently, it's going to be somewhere around the same place that me and you are from, apparently.
Okay, so it's in Wigan. Beautiful, beautiful. All right. We'll have you back.
It's going to be in London. I think it's going to be in London, isn't it? It's going to be in London, people are saying.
Well, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
COVID bullshit's coming back and ruining the party again. But all right, well, listen, we'll have you back on a bit nearer the time or when you're in training camp. Or well, maybe not when you're in training camp. But I'll tell you what I do want to ask you about, Tom. Obviously, lots going on in mixed martial arts, but there is a heavyweight title fight booked, Ngannou versus Cyril Garne. And obviously, I have opinions and whatnot. Francis is the champ, and Ngannou's the interim champ. Sorry, other way. Francis is the champ, Garn and Ngannou. There you see the mix-up. Garn is the interim champ, taking place just down the street from my house, actually, in Anaheim, California, January 22nd, I believe. Who do you see winning that fight, Tom?
Do you know what? I think Ngannou, the way he fights, he has a massive fear factor with him. Like, he's kind of like a prime Mike Tyson, like nobody wants to get hit by him. But I think someone with the skill set of like a Cyril Garne, he's quite unique in his skill set, his movement and stuff. I think he has what it takes to win. And especially because he sparred with him a few times and he's felt that power and he knows what it feels like. Whereas to the other guys who's fought, it's a foreign, they don't know how it feels yet. But because he's done a lot of sparring with him, he knows exactly how the power feels and exactly how to deal with it. So I can see Garn winning quite comfortably, but at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if he got knocked out in 30 seconds as well, because with that Francis Ngannou power, you just never know.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's a good comparison, actually, to Mike Tyson, because you're right. He does have that fear factor. Everyone's shit scared of that power. And it is interesting because you say they have sparred with one another, because that does kind of change things. As a contender yourself, Tom, who would you rather fight? Obviously, when you watch, when you're in the division, you know what I mean? You think, okay, this guy's going to win, that guy's going to win. Who would you rather fight out of the two of them?
I think they're both amazing. I rate them very, very highly. Me personally, I'd rather fight Cyril Garn because I think I match up. Even though I think Cyril Garn is actually far superior to him technically, I think that I match up better with Cyril Garn because there's only really one or maybe two people in the division who can keep up with the footwork of Cyril Garn, and I would say that's probably me and Chris Dawkins, to be honest with you. No one else has got that kind of footwork or movement, and as you see from Cyril Garn's fights, his previous fights, people don't really know what to do with that style of footwork. Now, if you watch me fight and if you watch Chris Dawkins fight, we're all elusive heavyweights, so we all have a similar kind of footwork heavy style, so I think it's only really us three that could match up well with each other in terms of that. But like I say, I think Garn is the better guy technically, the much better guy technically, but it doesn't mean that he can't get knocked out in 30 seconds because he definitely, definitely can against a guy like Ngannou.
No, that's right. Only takes one. Only takes one. All right then, Tom. So thanks for joining us, by the way, from a lovely dog, Wigan. You know, Harrington on here has a dog room. And we said on Monday, we said, listen, Harrington, you gotta come at us with some light, brother. You gotta get some fucking lights. You're part of the Gas Digital Studios. Get some fucking lights. Today he comes on and he's even darker. Okay, but I think he's on par with you. Brian, bring him on. Let's have a look at Harrington, see what he's working. Look at this. Look at this. On Monday, he was dark. Today, he's even fucking darker. What is going on, Harrington? And welcome to the show.
I mean, I am illuminated, Mike. I'm glowing over here. I don't know what you're possibly talking about.
You are trying to sabotage the show. I get it. Anyway, listen, Tom doesn't have too long. Tom can't talk about his fight. And Tom also has a problem finding lighting. Although saying that, what time of night is it in deep, dark Wigan? It's probably about, what, 7 o'clock at night?
I think it's a bit late at night. It's 7:45. Do you want me to turn the light on? I can put the big light on.
Oh, God, stick big light on, lad. There we go.
Hold on.
Stick big light on. I haven't heard that expression for a bit. I can stick big light on. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. Thanks for watching. Tom Aspinall, heavyweight contender. Oh, look at that. My God, now it's even too bright. There we go. We can see the color. We can see the look in the face. Harrington, you have got a list of some MMA topics that Tom and I are going to break down. Tom's going to give us a little insight into his mind. What do we have, my friend?
All right. Let's start off with probably the juiciest quote I've read all week. Dana White says that no one wants a piece of Khamzat. Here's the quote. Yes, 100%. Nobody wants to fight this guy. Everybody wants to go on social media and say this or say that. But when it really comes down to it, nobody's trying to fight Khamzat Chimaev. I don't blame them. But at the end of the day, when you're a professional fighter, this is what you do. You look at a guy with as much hype and as much bravado as Chimaev as a huge opportunity.
No, it's interesting. Have you been keeping up with this guy, Tom? Are you aware of Khamzat Chimaev and all his fun and games lately, what he's having on social media, calling everybody out from GSP to Daniel Cormier and other people?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can't really avoid him at this point. He's everywhere. He is everywhere. Yeah, I mean, he's a scary guy from what I've seen. He actually made his debut, I believe, on the same card as me. Or I was on the same card as him in Abu Dhabi. And even then, I actually seen him in the back. And he was warming up with Gustafsson. He was doing some wrestling with Gustafsson. Obviously, Gustafsson is a much bigger guy physically than Chimaev. And the guy was just launching him all over the place. I know, obviously, they're only warming up. But they might have been doing a workout even. It might have been during the week. But he was launching Gustafsson all over the place, picking him above his head, turning him, fireman's carries and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought, wow, who's this guy? And then obviously since then we've learned a lot more. And yeah, I'm not surprised people are scared of him, to be fair. He's a scary man.
No, that's interesting that you say that about Gustafsson, because that's always the rumor that does the rounds. You know what I mean? That apparently he dominates Gustafsson. And as you say, the warming up, he's got to fight. Gustafsson's being a training partner for him. But even still, if he can even compete with Gustafsson at welterweight, it's pretty incredible. He was going back and forth with Colby Covington this week, and Colby was like, listen, if you want to rush this guy and send him to the hospital, be my guest. And then fucking Khamzat sent, he was basically sending death threats. I don't know if you saw that. He's basically saying, yes, okay, I'll send you. And then he had like emojis of coffins and shit like that. I mean, I love it. I mean, I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself, but I can see a world where he's champion one day pretty soon. When I say pretty soon, I mean like a year, 18 months or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you see a lot of these guys who are coming up at the moment, and it's still a big question whether they're actually a hype train or not. I'm always, with myself personally, I'm always trying to make myself like a anti-hype train. I don't want to be a hype train. I want to be a...
But how do you stop that? How do you stop yourself being a hype train? Because if everyone's fucking jumping on board, they're jumping
on board.
It is
tough, but you know, I don't want to be that hype train guy that gets derailed. I don't want to be that guy. But what I'm saying is...
Hold on. But what would you rather be? A guy that's walking up to the train station trying to get on the hype train, right? Or no, trying to become a train of some sort, and you're not even on the tracks, and then you don't even get fucking derailed? Or would you rather be a hype train that gets derailed? Because you never know. Obviously, at some point, I hate to break it to you, at some point there might come a loss. Maybe there won't. Maybe you go through the UFC like Khabib, fucking wipe the floor with everyone. But losses may happen. You'd rather have a bit of support along the way, no?
Of course. No, I do agree with that, Mike. What I'm saying is I don't want to be one of the... My fear is to be like a flash in the pan type guy. A lot of UK guys are flashes in the pan, and that's just... That's not me slagging off UK MMA at all, but that's just that's just the truth. You know what I mean? There's a lot of guys who make it to the UFC. They come in with loads of hype behind them, and they're out faster than they're even in. So I would like to be a bit more of a steady burner. I don't want to have no fans, and I don't want to be like that. I want to, you know, build it up slowly and get there when I deserve it, not just because I'm a hype train. That's the way I look at it anyway.
Yeah, no. You're here for the long haul. That's what I've always said. You know what I mean? A lot of people, they want to make it to the UFC because, of course, it is it's the big show. It's where you make the most money. It's where the most eyeballs are, et cetera, et cetera. But then when they get here, they kind of think, oh, shit, we've done it. We've made it. This is where the hard work fucking starts. You know what I'm saying? And if you want to have a long career that's got to translate to success in later life, then, of course, you got to fucking be the opposite of a flash in the pan. What would be the opposite of a flash in the pan? A fucking... I don't know, something in the saucepan. I don't fucking know, but I get what you're trying to say. But Hamza, yeah, no, he's doing incredible things. And if I'll be honest, if I was in the welterweight division, I'd be trying to sidestep that motherfucker. I wouldn't be trying to call him out. I'd be like, fuck that. But still, anyway. All right, let's just take a quick second to talk about HempFusion.com. They have supported this show for a long time. And I've been an ambassador of HempFusion for a long time as well, simply because I want to be involved with the best CBD brand out there, and I truly believe that that is what Hemp Fusion is. Of course, that sounds like a hard sell, but the proof is in the pudding. The results that you get from the best quality really is incredible. Now, it's the way that they extract their CBD. A lot of people do it the quickest, most convenient, cost-effective way. Hemp Fusion do it the long and hard way, but that yields the better results. So trust me, it is the best quality that you can get. It is truly organic as well. So if that's important to you, which it should be, then of course Hemp Fusion ticks that box as well. Now I'm here to tell you about their sleep support. Okay, we all know how important a good night's sleep is. Well, Hemp Fusion, the sleep support, gets me to sleep every single night. And the good news is that when you wake up in the morning, you feel fresh. And of course, it blends 10 milligrams of CBD with terpenes, omegas, GABA, black pepper, clove oil, and they release the what they call the entourage effect. Of course, they also have energy support, which is the exact opposite of sleep support. They have stress support. They have gummies. They have every type of CBD, whichever form you want, then they have it on there. So go to hempfusion.com. That is the website. And the code is COUNT because it's the best quality. It's truly organic. They've got every type of CBD that they want. And we're also going to give you 25% off. So go to hempfusion.com. The code is COUNT. 25% off and free shipping. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. Check it out, hempfusion.com. All right, let's get back into it. Harrington, what else we got, buddy? You're on mute as well. This guy.
Oh, I am a buffoon. I'm a buffoon, and I'm sorry for that. I looked it up. Khamzat Chimaev, he debuted 10 days before you. He was on that same Whitaker versus Till card as you in Abu Dhabi, but then he had fought 10 days prior. Khamzat Chimaev, only 4 wins in the UFC. Tom Aspinall, 4 wins in the UFC. Oh. Why is Tom Aspinall not next in line as a possible title challenger?
Hold on. Tom's got just as much hype, I would say, in terms of heavyweight division. Of course, Khamzat goes out there, he talks shit, and you know, Tom plays it cool. Tom's a little bit more, right, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have some hype. I'm comfortable with the hype that I've got. I'm happy with the way it's going. Mike, where the hell are you going?
I'm listening.
All right, okay.
The light coming through there was illuminating one side of my face, and I was looking like a fucking white walker on one side and then a regular human being on the other. So I had to adjust. My apologies. Where were you?
Yeah, there's definitely some hype behind me, but I don't have that level of hype, the same as Khamzat and these other guys come in like a Paddy Pimblett and stuff like that. They're doing really good stuff for themselves. But I'm aware that heavyweights, they develop a lot later than the other weights, and I'm only 28, do you know what I mean? Mm. Even like Cyril Gane and stuff, they're like 32, 33 or whatever, and I'm aware that it's got to go a little bit slower before I hit my prime. So we're going
to
build
it
up slowly.
Have you been face-to-face? With Garner and then Garner, have you been in the same room? Yes. Have you shook hands? Have you had a chit chat?
Yes. Well, listen to this. Me and Cyril Garner, I have actually beaten 3 of his teammates. Sogan. So I know him pretty. When I fight Sogan eventually, it's going to be like the final boss. It's going to be like fighting the final boss on a game. I beat all his teammates, and I'm just stuck. I'm just stuck with Sogan to finish, and he's amazing. But yeah, I've met him a few times. Seems like a really nice guy. I know his coach as well. Seems like a good guy. And why? What are you saying? I'm a small.
No. I was just saying, have you been up to him? Have you? Well, exactly. Have you sized yourself up against him? Because you're not a small guy, Tom. You're far from it. But he's 6'6". You know.
Of course, I think a lot of people think that I'm small when they see me on the TV, but then they see me in real life and they're like, geez, you're a lot bigger than you look. I don't know if it's because I move so fast or what, but yeah, I am actually, I believe that I was quite a bit bigger than Sogan when I met him. I've met him a few times, but obviously he's a big guy as well. So, you know what, anybody over like 92 kilos at heavyweight, they're all dangerous. Doesn't matter if you're small and fat. The tall and skinny, it does not matter. Everybody is dangerous. Doesn't matter.
Often
what
those, I was going to say, often those little fat ones, they're the ones you got to watch. Do you know what I mean? Because like you're like, oh, he's got nothing in him, and bang, and they crack you. I mean, look at Mark Hunt. Not that I'm calling him little and fat, because he's far from little and fat. But you know what I'm saying? The short, stockier ones, maybe the ones sometimes with a loose barrel around the midsection, they can fucking crack a punch, those guys.
Definitely. Have you ever had the experience of training or fighting with a small fat guy that has amazing cardio, and then you just
what is this?
This doesn't even make sense.
It's like, what is this phenomenon? What is going on? You're short, you're fat, you're clearly out of shape, you don't pay attention to your diet, but yet you've got crazy cardio, you're fast as lightning, and you're really fucking good. It's very embarrassing to get your ass kicked by someone that looks like that, because it's happened to me on many, many occasions. All right, Harrington, what else have we got, buddy? Give us something good.
All right. Well, you mentioned his name. He did have a couple of headline things this morning. Colby Covington. I think it was UFC on BT Sport. Your friends, actually, Michael, that picked this up. Colby Covington, was caught after his fight at UFC 268. He went up. He gave Kamaru Usman a big hug. And for just a second, he dropped the, Make America Great Again and MAGA Colby persona and let Kamaru Usman know that he was just trying to sell the fight for Usman and that it's all love between the two of them. I don't know if you've
ever seen it. Thanks, Harrington. Sorry, but I thought you were done. Yeah, I did see that this morning. I'm not sure if you saw it, Tom. He went over and he went up to Usman and he said, yeah, you know, I'm just trying to sell it for you.
Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington.
Good fight.
What?
You know, I'm trying to sell for you.
Get the
money, bro. I know.
I like that. Good job,
though.
Good job. Much respect.
And, you know, I don't know Colby. I've never met him personally. I'm assuming you haven't either. But that's what everybody says. Everybody says that it is clearly an actor. I don't know if you've heard the story or not. Apparently, before the Damian Maia fight, his manager told him he was going to get cut. So that's why he went down there. And after he beat Maia, he called Brazil dirty, filthy animals and a bunch of rats and shit like that. And he kind of created this persona. The only interaction I've had with him was when I argued with him once, kind of on Fox Sports. He came out the gate after he beat Dos Anjos, kind of criticizing all the people on the Fox Sports desk. So I went back and forth when we had some bullshit. But apparently, what everyone says is that he's actually, when he stops the act, he's a very nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had any interactions with him, never met the guy, don't know the guy. He probably has no idea who I am anyway. Yeah. But let me quote something, Mike, that you told me on a drunken night out in Manchester.
Oh, God. Darren, tell me. Do not, Darren, tell me on my own podcast. Go ahead.
Why? What's he done? What's he doing these days?
We got pissed in bloody New York, didn't we? And he pulled his phone out, and I was just saying nice things just to try and make him feel good. And he posts it on his bloody Instagram. Made a right dick out of me.
I think I have seen it actually. But anyway, I think you said something along the lines of, it was something along the lines of, you know, it's important to win fights. It's important to, you know, do this and do that. Win titles, but what's really important is making money and supporting your family. And you're right. People like that, it's not just, of course it's about winning fights. Of course it's about grinding in the gym and working hard and getting good cardio and recovering properly and doing whatever you can to win. But what else is important is having something that solidifies that, like money and being able to buy stuff and, giving your family nice things and being comfortable and all the rest of the stuff that money brings. You don't want to be doing this stuff for free. So if he's making money out of it and he's doing well and he's happy with that, then fair play to him.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And thanks for just bringing that up. I'm sure there was something way more embarrassing. But that is a good point, because ultimately, what are we all doing this for? And most people, you know, sometimes there's people that criticize that kind of mentality. They say, oh, he's just doing it for the money. And I say to them, well, what do you get up and go to work for on a Monday morning for? We all go for the money. That's what we're doing. Do you think we're sacrificing our body, putting ourselves through these torturous training camps and risking our lives? You know, I mean, that might sound a bit of a stretch and people aren't necessarily dying, but we are risking our bodies and our long-term health by stepping in there. We're doing it to set ourselves up financially. Now, the reality is, the sad thing is that not a lot of people will be able to do that. You know what I mean? But that's the risk that you take to be great. Now, there is a select percentage that can do that, you know, that are really good, and the cream always rises to the top, you know. And if you're good enough, and yes, to the point of what you said, or initially what I said, yeah, of course, the titles and the fame and the respect from people, from the public and the buying public, that is great to have, and of course you want that. But ultimately, we're doing this to try and set our families up, to set our lives up, and to give ourselves a better life, you know. I mean, so I don't have to work in factories or whatever you were doing before you were in the UFC, Tom.
Yeah, I don't want to go back to doing that shit again. That's what I mean. That's why I'm trying to not be like a flash in the pan. That's why I want to do whatever I can and give myself the most advantages that I possibly can, so that I can keep doing this for as long as I possibly can, to the end of my career, and then I can retire and just chill, do something else then. I don't want to retire and fucking go and work in a factory, or retire and go and work part-time in a gym, or whatever else I would be doing. I don't want to do any of that stuff. Do you know what I mean? I want to retire and enjoy life doing whatever I want to do by the time I'm 40 years old. Do you know what I mean? I want to set myself up for life doing this, make as much money and squeeze as much money out of this thing and get as much as I possibly can out of it. I'm not trying to do this just to see if I can, like I say, a lot of people just want to see if they can get in the UFC. This is where it fucking starts, mate. This is where it starts. I ain't seen if I can get to the UFC and have one and see how I get on. I'm in this thing for the long haul, trying to win the frigging UFC title. I'm not trying to just have a go.
Yeah, it's like when I went on The Ultimate Fighter way back in 2005. When I was on there, I could tell there was a few people that were there just to have their 15 minutes of fame. You know what I mean? I was like, no, I'm here to win this entire fucking show. That's why I was so driven every time. And then that was just an entry point to the UFC. And just to your point, like we said for the last 10 minutes, that's where the hard work fucking starts. You know what I mean? And it is, you do have an opportunity to change your life. And I know there's a popular narrative out there that some media members and some people like to talk shit. But if you look at Conor McGregor, I mean, he's the prime example. And to be fair, he's kind of a unicorn. He's not somebody that most people can look to replicate, because that kind of success and fame and wealth doesn't really come along too often. You know, throughout all of combat sports, he's one of the biggest earners. But still, it does give you inspiration. And I was able to turn my life around, you know what I mean, and give my family a good life. And I'm living a good life now. I'm earning a living sitting in a fucking leather chair, chatting away to the fucking future heavyweight prospect, Tom Aspinall. Harrington, what else have we got, my friend?
Well, I was just going to follow up on how Colby did with that, right? You know, he said it was in the process of trying to sell the pay-per-view. Aaron Bromster came out and said that he believed... Did I mispronounce it? Aaron Bromster from PFN?
I do believe you were referring to Aaron Bronstetter.
Ah, there you go. Okay. Yeah. I only know him from Twitter.
So. You just pronounce it how it's spelt. That's okay. Yeah. It's okay. Just read it.
We didn't learn that in American schools. So to his credit, he says that the pay-per-view UFC 268 did 700,000 buys, which is, you know, significantly more than any other Kamaru Usman defense has ever done. You know, is the Colby Covington model still working in 2021?
Interesting question. I mean, yes, I would say it was. The first thing is, you know, we can sit here and we can talk, and Tom can talk, and we can talk about theories and this and that. You got to be able to fight. It doesn't matter if you can sell a fight. It doesn't matter if you can talk shit, if you're a comedian, if you're hilarious, you're captivating, you're interesting, you're super intelligent, and just ultimately really watchable. None of that matters if you can't fucking fight. You know what I mean? But if you can fight and, of course, you're interesting, then that's going to translate to more people watching. You're going to try and have some kind of angle. You can't be false. You can't be fake. You can't go out there and try and put it on. You can't go out there and pretend to be a Conor McGregor or a Colby Covington. But what Colby Covington did at that press conference, I don't know if you saw it, Tom, with Kamaru Usman. Did you see any of that in New York in Madison Square Garden? Because it was genius.
Is that the one where they were both wearing the terrible suits? Was it that one?
Yeah. I mean, listen, yeah, I'll say this. Colby's was terrible. Kamaru's was kind of fly. You know, I would never dream of wearing a leopard print suit. But if there's anyone that can get away with it, it's Kamaru Usman, because he carries it. He's got that swagger. He's got that coolness to him. Do you know what I mean? But you didn't see it.
No, I didn't see it. You know, I'm not too interested about the whole performing side of the UFC. This is my personal opinion. If someone does it naturally, it's more authentic to me and I can watch it. But if someone's putting it on, like turning up in a shitty suit and they've got lines prepared beforehand, if someone's got banter and they're funny and they can do it like off the cuff, I'll watch it all day and I'll enjoy it. But if somebody's making it up, if they wrote it down before, like you can tell with Colby and a few other people, me personally, I find that difficult to watch.
Yeah, no, it is. It can come across as very, very cringe. All right, Harrington, can we have something that's not Colby Covington, please? I think that's three in a row now.
Thank you.
Colby Covington.
Thank you. What the fuck's going on?
Yeah,
what,
it's not the Colby show.
Why are you so
it's not
the fucking.
Yeah, it's not the Harrington coming at us from the depths of hell show either. Give us a fucking nice MMA topic. We can have a discussion about Harrington that doesn't involve Colby Covington or Aaron Brunson.
All right, I think this might be kind of fun. Sean O'Malley, you know, came out. He was bumping his gums this week. You know, he had offered to fight Dominic Cruz and Pedro Munhoz. Cruz already had the fight booked against Munhoz. We found out at the time. O'Malley said he messed up. I called him and Pedro Munhoz out. Now they're on the prelims. I guess it doesn't really matter. They're going to get paid the same whether on the main card or the prelims. I'm going to get paid the same whether I'm opening up the main card or the prelims. So as far as making money, it doesn't really matter. But for your ego, that's got to hurt. Being talked about as one of the best bantamweights ever, and you're on the prelims? I don't even know if he's headlining the prelims. Prelim Pedro versus Dominic. It makes sense down there. I haven't talked to anybody that's super excited for that fight. They're both top 10. I'm pretty sure me and Piava aren't even ranked, and we're opening the main card. So I think that goes to show I'm the unranked champ.
Interesting. No, I did see that, and Tom came back just in time. You went dark there for a second, Tom. Just saying, Sean O'Malley, he's opening the pay-per-view next weekend in Vegas. Dominic Cruz, of course, long time. You know, one of the bantamweight goats. He's down on the prelims, not even the prelim headliner, against Pedro Munhoz. And anyway, O'Malley's been talking shit. Did you catch all that, Tom?
No.
No, you're good.
No.
Yeah, so you got the gist of it. Anyway, so O'Malley is not even ranked. Dominic Cruz is obviously a former multiple-time champion, and he's below him on the on the card, and he's on the prelims. And he's saying that must hurt his ego. And it's a difficult one for me to talk about this because obviously I work with Dominic and I'm friends with Dominic and I've known him a long time, but I kind of get it. I kind of get what he's saying to a certain degree, but listen, Sean O'Malley's a star. You know, Dominic Cruz has been around for a long time. He's probably a Hall of Famer down the line. He's had a career. He's been a champion. He's been a multiple time champion. He's one of the best to ever do it at bantamweight at the moment. On the flip side, Sean O'Malley is the young upstart, isn't he? And he has got flair. Everything we just said about Colby Covington kind of applies to Sean O'Malley in terms of star quality. I don't think O'Malley's one of these guys that's preparing lines or anything like that, but he does have a natural star quality, a watchability to him. And then on top of it, inside the octagon, the guy can fucking fight. Yes, of course, he's yet to fight somebody, you know, that's ranked or one of the higher rankings. In fact, I don't think he's fought anybody ranked. But still, you know, he's fighting the people the UFC are giving him. He's putting on great performances. He's entertaining people in a big way. But yeah, I mean, it's good for his brand to talk a little shit at Dominic Cruz, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I like watching Sean O'Malley. I think his style's fantastic to watch. I would love to see a rematch with... I don't know why I want to see the rematch, because Chito Vera obviously won that fight, clearly. But I want to see Chito Vera do it again. For some reason, I don't know why. Obviously, Chito, he he had his number the first time around, and for some reason, I don't know. Obviously, Sean O'Malley, he does have that thing about him where you want to watch him. I don't know if it's his... Personally, I don't like to watch his interviews and stuff. I think it's, again, it's for me, it's a little bit cringy. I don't know. With the dyed pink hair and all that shit, the weird suits. No, it's just not for me. But I'll watch the fuck out of him fight, though. I love to watch him fight.
Oh, no, me too. Honestly, his footwork and his striking is beautiful to watch. It really is. And you're a man that knows about footwork. But just let's talk about Tom. Me and you, right, we're from the northwest of England. You're from Wigan. For a lot of these listeners won't know, Wigan is a very, how would you describe Wigan? It's a very northwest, British, no-nonsense, working-class town, you know, where it's grim, it's dark, it's miserable, you know. Don't get me wrong, it's beautiful as well, and when the sun comes out, but I'm from just down the street in Clitheroe, so everything I said applies to Wigan as well. I'm not talking shit, but I'm just saying it's a very no-nonsense type of town where people aren't walking around with dyed blue and pink hair and elaborate suits on. You know what I'm saying? So it's not surprising that you aren't on board on the Sean O'Malley hype train.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, like you say, people, they're not walking, they're definitely not walking around looking like that. And if they are,
what would happen? What would happen if, like, one of the bars where you used to bounce, right? A guy came in, he had like a multiple colored suit on, he had big, puffy bouffant hair that was half pink, half blue, half purple, and like some wacky shades of stars on and stuff like that. What would happen to him?
I was literally going to say before you very rudely interrupted me that if someone's going to walk around like that, they're going to get beat up pretty quick. Maybe not. So they're going to get robbed. They're going to get robbed pretty quick, in my opinion. In the town I'm from, the small town of Atherton, on the outside of...
Atherton, not Wigan. My bad.
They're all blurred lines anyway, Mike, but... Yeah. Yeah, it's a similar kind of similar places, aren't they? They're all these northwest mining towns. They're all rough, working class, rough and ready. Everyone straight out of the factory. They took the drugs on a weekend, and they're ready to go at any point. So he would get robbed. He would get robbed pretty quick, I'm sure.
Yeah, but the thing is, they'd be picking on the wrong fucking guy, and that's a great thing these days because martial arts has become so and popular because of the UFC and the rise of mixed martial arts all over the world. A lot of people that once upon a time would have never studied martial arts are now studying it. So therefore, you see a lot of people, and you might see a Sean O'Malley, and you might think, oh, this little pipsqueak, he's a skinny little guy with his multicolored hair. And then one of these lads that, as you say, been working at the factory, and he's took his drugs at the weekend, he's a bit hungover, and he's had a few pints of Stella, he's got a bit Dutch courage. Those motherfuckers, rough lads, can't necessarily fight, though. They swing from back here, and that guy that they're trying to pick on would just boom, boom, piece him up, 1-2, slip out of the way, smoke his joint, and walk off laughing his head off.
Yeah, like I've seen it enough times these days on nights out and stuff. It's people like that, you see them, and most of the time it's because with martial arts it's mainly the people, not mainly, but a lot of the time it's people that need a confidence boost and stuff like that go to martial arts clubs and learn stuff like that. So they're more likely them kind of people to get picked on, and you don't them are not the guys that you want to pick on.
No. Well, people shouldn't be picking on anybody anyway. I was never went out there and picked on people or bullied people. Yeah, I've had some regrettable interactions in my lifetime, but I never went out picking on people looking for a fight. George St. Pierre, prime example of what you're talking about there. There was a guy, he's quite open about it. He was bullied a lot as a kid, as was I a little bit. Then he got into martial arts, and that was the greatest of all time. Harrington, show yourself, please.
All right. How about this one? Kind of a sadder news. Kevin Lee has been cut by the UFC. His manager thinks the UFC is making a mistake. Here's the quote. The UFC's decision to release Kevin is disappointing and unfortunate. Kevin is young, talented, and has fought some of the toughest guys on the UFC's roster. I think the UFC made the wrong decision in releasing him, but we all believe there are brighter days ahead in Kevin's career. Lee is now 29 years old. He's 2-5 in his last 7, and he's currently serving a 6-month suspension for amphetamines for his ADD medication. What do you guys think is next for Kevin Lee?
Well, I'll just give my opinion on that thing first, Tom. I'm a fan of Kevin Lee. I'm assuming you've watched a fair few of Kevin's fights, Tom, right? Being a fan of the sport.
Of course.
Yeah. You never know, though, because some fighters, you know, whilst they fight in the UFC, some people, when we talk to them, when I do fighter meetings, because we have to interview them, as you know, on a Wednesday before the fight, and they'll say, no, I don't watch it. I don't watch it, which I always find kind of weird and confusing. But anyway, so I would just double check him. Kevin's a great fighter, and I think he's put on some fantastic performances in the octagon. I love what he brings to the table. He's a good striker. He's a good wrestler, good all-around skills, a good athlete. He talked a fair bit of shit as well. I think he had a kind of an enigmatic personality. He was very watchable. But as I said at the beginning, when we were talking about having star power, you've got to win your fight. You know what I mean? That's the ultimate one. And 3 out of 4, he lost. And I think there was a couple before that when he won one and he lost a couple beforehand. So there's more red on the record than there is green lately. And then on top of that, he tests positive, which kind of was, you know, I think it was a misunderstanding, shall we say. It was Adderall, and he never got the TUE, the exemption certificate, if you will. But you put it all together, you're losing fights, you get suspended, you know, then it's a difficult spot for the UFC. And I think for somebody like Kevin now, and far be it from me to speak for him, but he'll be at a crossroads now, because I see it a lot. You know, I've been around the UFC and the sport for a long time now, and I've seen many people get cut, but then they go away and they prove what they're made of. And they fight their way back to the UFC. And all of a sudden, they're back in the UFC and they start having a great career. You know, Kevin's still pretty young. I think he's only like 28, 29, something similar to yourself, Tom. Had, I think, about 17 fights in the promotion. You know, so a lot of experience. Maybe I'm wrong on that number. Just look that up if you can, Harrington. But look at Brandon Moreno. Perfect example. Got cut from the organization, came back, and now he's the flyweight champion. But what do you make of that situation, Tom?
First of all, let me just say, wow, Mike, you know a lot of stuff about these fighters. You should maybe look into doing commentary or something like that, you know. It's fantastic. But, yeah, I think, obviously, he's had a few losses of late. And I think what you need to realise, I'm not giving him advice, but what people watching need to realise is, as a fighter, you bring certain stuff to the UFC, but you can always be replaced. You can always be replaced. Quite, can you still hear me, Mike? Are you all right?
Yeah. No, I am. Harrington just put in the chat, 18 fights in the UFC. Yeah. That's a lot of fights.
It's a lot of fights, but if you're on a losing streak, surely you almost have to realise that you can get cut and you need to start winning. So, like you say, maybe it's just a case of he needs to go somewhere else, get a few good wins. Maybe that'll give him a bit of motivation and he'll come back and do big things. Who knows what he's going to do from here, but hopefully he's going to get good money and be able to keep his career going.
Yeah, but I still think he has a future. But that's what I'm talking about. Sometimes it impresses me because some people say, as we said before about getting to the UFC, people think when they get to the UFC, it's like, here, I did it. I've climbed Mount Everest. There we go. I'm at the top of the world. It's like, no, now this is where the real hard work starts. Now you're in with real contenders, real world-class people. And okay, you know, he's been let go by the promotion. Doesn't mean that the UFC wouldn't do business with him again. I don't know the ins and outs. I don't know if there's bad blood or if it's just very businesslike. But if he goes away and wins a few fights in the promotion, he has a very good chance of coming back and signing with the promotion because he is a star. You know what I mean? But as I say, being a star, having a personality, being exciting, it will only get you so far. You have to win fights. And it is a shame for Kevin because I've spoken to him a few times and he's actually a really nice guy. You know what I mean? I do like him. But he moved up a weight class. He moved up to welterweight. He fought Daniel Rodriguez, who's a bigger guy than him. And he had a tough night at the office. I think sometimes people, when they start struggling, they look to move weight classes. You know what I mean? I don't think that's always the answer. Obviously for you, Tom, that's never going to be a possibility because do you have to cut weight to make 265?
No, I don't, Mike, you cheeky bastard. I do not.
Well, I don't know. Some big guys have to cut weight to make 265.
No, no.
You fucking midget. Sorry, small person. Shouldn't say that.
My natural weight is I'm like 250. So
right.
When I train, when I'm fit, I'm about 242, 243, something like that. So I'm a mid-range kind of heavyweight, really. Not a massive heavyweight, not a small heavyweight. Just bang in the middle, I think.
No, I wouldn't say small. You're optimal, I would say. Maybe a few more pounds. But obviously, the heavier you get, the slower you get. In fact, talking of cutting weight, Harrington, just tee us up on number one with Dan Hooker. because we were going to talk about that another time, but it kind of relates to this one. So let's talk about it.
Certainly, yeah. Dan Hooker seems like he's making the most of his time. Remember, he's got to spend that extra time stateside after getting out of New Zealand. So he headed over to the UFC PI to work with a dietitian to make a test cut down to 146. He looked all right in the short video that he posted. So it seems like he's going to make a try down to that 145-pound division. In addition, Kevin Holland and Kelvin Gastelum are also using the PI to move down from 185 to 170.
Insane. I think it's insane. How would you just look up how tall he is? I think he's like 6'2". I think Dan Hooker's 6'2". Really lovely guy. I've never actually met Dan. I don't think I have. Never had a conversation with him, you know, properly. Seems like a lovely guy. 6 feet. All right, 6 feet tall at 145. Seems bigger on TV. I think that's just because he's against shorter guys. But going down to 145, I'm not sure if that's the answer. Everyone's looking to change weight classes. Sometimes it's just accept that you got beat by a better man on the day and try and make improvements. Because in my experience, when you go down, because you've never had to do it, Tom, but when you go through those really tough weight cuts and you're cutting yourself, you know, you're dehydrating yourself 15 pounds the night before, it affects your ability to take a punch. And I don't think Dan's necessarily been knocked out cold in the UFC, but at 145, you never know, going through a weight cut like that. I don't know. I'm sure the UFC PI know more about it than me. Have you worked with the PI, Tom? What do you know about those guys?
I don't know a lot about the PI, to be honest. I've been to the PI a couple of times, but yeah, obviously, I'm not involved with the weight cuts and all that kind of stuff, so I don't need to work closely with anybody on that. My nutrition is very good. Even though I'm a heavyweight now, I have a nutritionist, and I work closely with him. I look after my body well, and my recovery is a lot better. And I started taking that stuff seriously since I got in the UFC, because before I was in the UFC, as you can tell by my first couple of fights, I wasn't in shape. Like, I would train hard. Like, I would train hard and stuff, but I wasn't in shape. I didn't look after my body or anything like that. I would turn up at the gym, do a 2-hour session, and then go for a pie and a beer after it.
Yeah,
that's what
It sounds a good fucking training.
Oh, man. It was a great time. It was a great time. But you need to realize these other guys, they are doing this kind of stuff. And as we spoke about before, you want to give yourself as many advantages as you possibly can to go in there and win. I don't know about you. Well, I do know about you, but I don't know about these other guys. But I do not want to get my ass kicked in front of millions of people. I will do anything I can for that not to happen. So if it gives me an advantage to not go down and have a beer and have a pie after training and eat clean and let my body recover properly, I will do that every time.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? We're going to play a little game here of what you used to eat in training camp and what you eat currently in training camp and what I used to eat in training camp. So my day would start. I get up nice and early. I'd have some coffee and I'd go for a run. Fasted cardio, no food, nothing, no nutrients because I'm trying to burn some fat. How did your first hour or so of your morning start?
How did it start, or how does it start at the moment?
No. When you're in training camp, I'd get out of bed, I'd have a coffee, and then I'd go for a run. No food whatsoever. How did your day start as a heavyweight?
Well, definitely not like that. No, do you know what? I actually, I've been suffering with a bad knee for like 3 years. I've not been able to kick at all for 3 years. And I'm able to kick again now, and I'm able to run again. Now that I've started to rehab my knee properly, and it takes time, doesn't it, to get any injuries better without surgery. Yeah. So now I'm actually going to start to incorporate a morning running into my process a little bit. So you will see the cardio improve a little bit, which is going to be nice.
Well, you were never lacking, but let's keep it on the diet for now. So I'd get out of bed, I'd exercise, I'd run. Then I'd have my breakfast was like, because I was trying to keep it low carb because I was always a fat bastard. You know what I mean? I always let myself go between training camps. So then it would be like eggs. Just like scrambled eggs, something like that. And then I'd hit the training camp. Oh, sorry, they hit the gym for a session.
No, do you know what? Since this year, 2021, near enough every meal that I've put in my body has been weighed. So everything is everything's weighed out. I'm so strict with my diet. You might not be able to tell yet, but it's coming.
No, you look good.
It's coming.
So what's an average breakfast then for you?
The average breakfast for me is 80 grams of porridge.
Nice. That's oatmeal.
Oatmeal. Apologies. American fans out there. Mike's fans. I got no fans.
Oh,
Mike supporters. But 80 grams of porridge, oatmeal, and 70 grams of raisins. So I'll do that.
That's it?
No, I'll do that first of all.
I was going to say, but that sounds like 70 grams of raisins. That's a lot, nice bit of natural sugar there, some carbohydrates.
That's a lot of carbs. That's about
there's a lot of carbs, yeah.
That's about 150 grams of carbs, that, with a
whole milk.
Well.
Are we talking whole milk or anything fancy like oat milk or anything like that?
No, I go water.
Oh, fuck that, yeah, Tom. Yeah. Come on, mate. You're a fucking heavyweight. You're going water. What are you doing? No, sorry. Mate. Sorry. You got to go milk, man. You can't have fucking porridge with water.
Nope. Do you know what? This year, I told myself, I'm in the top organisation in the world. I broke the top 15.
Have a bit of milk.
I'm going all in, Mike. I'm not doing milk. Yeah, and then on the way to the gym, I will then go a bagel, peanut butter and jam.
Ooh,
on the way to the gym.
Straight
after the gym, yeah, straight after the gym, protein shake, back home, chicken, veg and rice. Then I'll usually have something like prawns and potatoes then. Then I will train again.
Snack, you mean?
No, I eat about 5-6 times a day, mate.
Yeah.
About 5-6 times a day, yeah.
And so then prawns and potatoes, again. Then you train in the evening.
Yep, then I'll train in the evening. I'll do another shake. And then I'll usually do some kind of veg, carbs and protein again. And then I usually like to end the day on soup. I like a bit of soup. Yeah,
Nice bit of soup. What kind of soup are we talking here?
I go veg soup, to be honest, because I'm not all that keen on eating veg. So I try and get as much veg as I can in through soup. It doesn't taste as bad.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great, and I wish I was a heavyweight, because on the flip side, mine was all about carb restriction, because I was always, I wish now that I'm retired, I wish I did it all different. I mean, I had a good career, but I could have made I could have done it way better. I could have been stricter on my diet. So my task was getting down to make 185, which was a fucking nightmare. I'd have eggs in the morning, then I'd have a little bit of a protein shake afterwards. Then it was chicken, sausage, eggs, avocado, tomatoes, mushrooms for lunch. Then I'd have a nap. Then it was a training session. Then it was like cauliflower rice, which is hardly any carbs in that. Chicken breast, vegetables, and then maybe a scoop of a protein shake before bed. Hardly any carbs. Fucking miserable. Absolutely miserable. But yeah, there you go. Tom, I got to say, you got to put some milk. You can do this. That's not going to affect your performance. Right? It's not going to affect anything. It's just going to make me respect you a bit more, Tom. You've got to have some milk in that porridge.
I mean, I can only go up from where I'm at with you right now. I can only go up anyway in the respect. So, but it doesn't even taste that different. It's the same, isn't it? It's the same. It doesn't matter to me.
I can't do it.
I'm not bothered.
Today we are welcoming back IP Vanish VPN to the show. You know the deal. IP Vanish has been a long-time sponsor of ours, so it's so great to have them back. And let me tell you about IP Vanish. If you care about the security of your online activity, and you really should, the easiest way to protect yourself is with IP Vanish VPN. Rated 4 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot, IP Vanish provides an encrypted connection for all of your internet traffic, helping to prevent websites, Wi-Fi providers, or even hackers from intercepting your data. You know, we're talking all your financial details, personal information, online activity is completely safe from threats with IP Vanish. Okay, you're not going to get hacked. You're not going to have people logging into your bank account, people hacking your Instagram, your social media and all that stuff, and changing your passwords and blackmailing you. Believe me, that stuff goes on. Okay, IP Vanish eradicates all of that. And also, if you're in other countries, you can maybe access certain pornographic websites. What do I know? But still, get started. If you're in Abu Dhabi, trust me, it's going to come in handy. Get started with this limited time offer and save 50% off your monthly and annual subscriptions by going to ipvanish.com/believe. 50% off, ladies and gentlemen. One more time, that is ipvanish.com/believe. And that's all lowercase, by the way. Okay, where were we?
Hit Harrington. Non-MMA.
Hear me now.
Non-MMA subjects. Come on, let's go talking about fucking Colby Covington for an hour here. Come on.
He doesn't want to talk fucking MMA, Harrington. What have you got? Throw something at him. Give him your best shot.
Well, this is technically non-MMA, and I'm going to see if... let's see here. All right. How about the Tommy Fury-Jake Paul press conference? Did you either one of you see any of this?
Right. I tried to watch some of it. The sound quality was fucking awful. I saw the highlights. I saw what John Fury said, but do we have a video we can play?
Yeah, I mean, that's the one highlight I can think of is John Fury is a highlight machine all to himself. I think I sent the clip over, Brian, if you want to bring that up, please.
Play that. I tell you what, Brian, here's what we need to play. On my Instagram, it might be, it's like the second to last video that I put on. Friend of the show, impressionist Schaefer Bates. I don't know if you know who he is. He did an impression video where he plays John Fury and Tommy Fury, and it is hilarious, right? Brian, bring that up, please, when you get a chance. But what do you think of that? So what was it? John Fury, far be it, I'm not talking shit about John Fury, but he does more talking than anybody else. He is. Oh, here it is. Check this out. Listen to this. This is hilarious. Got no sound, Brian.
Americans love to trash. Right, Tommy, come on. We're practicing your trash talk. And we all know these Americans love to trash talk. Right. Take your microphone.
Come December 18th, my friend, you're getting knocked spark out.
Get up, you chummy. That was good. You've got to sound more like Tyson. You've got to really go for it.
You're living in your brother's shadow. End of the day, I'd knock you out.
You got to hear the end bit. The end 5 seconds is hilarious.
Come on, get it stuck in him, Tommy.
December 18th, I'm knocking you spark out, and I'm doing you some serious damage.
Go on, Tommy, get stuck into him now.
December 18th, I'm knocking you spark out, and I'm doing you some serious damage. I'm going to knock you square stiff. I'm going to pound you and ground you into the earth. Do you understand, my friend?
Come on, yeah. Proper lay into him. Come on, tell him.
Here we go.
Say something real nasty, like a proper man. Real horrible.
I'm going to...
And if you're ever in Miami and you see his girlfriend, you can bend her over and do it like a dog. Political bastards. That's a lot of them. No. I don't care if it's inappropriate. No. I don't care. I'll do it like a dog and we'll suck all their dicks. Get them some. Jake Paul, you sloth. Dosser. Right, Tommy, come on, we're practicing your trash talk.
Suck all their dicks. Oh, God, that had me, man. I was dying. Oh, God. Have you seen that, Tom?
Yeah, I think I commented on it. But let me, I've got a few stories, actually, about the Fury family.
What about sucking dicks, Tom?
Hey, no, well, that's just in my spare time, really. That's not a...
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's just on the side.
No, you got some Fury stories, have you? Come on, we'd love to hear.
I have known the Fury family for a long time, about 10 years or something like that. The friends of my dad's and stuff, and I used to go up and spar. I sparred Tommy loads of times. I sparred Tyson and Huey loads of times as well. And I used to train down there. I used to be trained by their uncle, Peter Fury. When I was, I don't know how old I was, but I sold John Fury a car, right? I don't know how this came about, but I sold John Fury an old Mercedes that I had for 300 quid. It was an absolute banger. And John Fury bought it for 300 quid. Anyway, about a week later, I didn't change the owner's document or whatever. I forgot to change it. About a week later, I started getting a few letters through the door saying that I had speeding tickets and stuff. And obviously, John's got the speeding tickets, not me. John's been picking up speeding tickets.
I know where this is going, but go on.
So I remember I was like 22 years old or 23 or whatever, just a young kid. And I had to go and ask John for the money for the speeding ticket.
Oh, God.
But no, nothing actually. He didn't make a fuss. He just put his hand in his pocket and gave me the money. But the build up to asking that man for 50 quid or 100 quid or whatever was unbelievable. It was a sleepless night beforehand. I was thinking, oh my God, please don't shout at me. Don't fight me in front of all these people, please. But he was good as gold. He gave me the money straight away, absolutely no issues. But I remember thinking, fuck, John, please don't make a scene.
You know, I had the exact same thing kind of in a reverse situation just yesterday. Because when I was out in England last week, Darren, our good friend Darren Till, said he sorted me out a car through Faster Car Finance. And they sorted me out a car. Thank you very much. I enjoyed that. And when I got back, I got a text message yesterday from John that works with them all. Not John Fury, John who works for Faster Car Finance. He says, Mike, I hate to say this to you, bad news. I'm like, what's that? And he's had a fucking speeding ticket through. I was going 68 in a 60-mile-an-hour zone on the A59 in Clitheroe. So, God, you son of a bitch. But, of course, no problem. Send off the details and pay the fine, yeah. There you go. Anyway, so, Harrington, We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about that too much. I'm kind of sick of talking about Jake Paul, to be honest. I mean, fair play to him. I'm a fan of what he's doing. I wish him all the best. And it's, you know, he's bringing a lot of eyes to combat sports. But, you know, breaking down him and Tommy Fury. I mean, what do you think about his dad, actually? That's a good question. What do you think about his dad saying that if he loses, he's out of the family?
I know on a personal level. What I've seen it firsthand. You've got to remember, a lot of people are seeing this online and they don't know what these guys are actually like. I know firsthand what kind of pressure Tommy Fury will be under. And the man is under a lot of pressure from the family. Because it's not just John who's like that. You've got to remember, Tommy's got five brothers. Got five brothers and they're a boxing mad family. And cousins who box, you know what the traveling people are like.
Oh, they're all into boxing.
They are obsessed with boxing. They have a massive family and they're all into boxing. And if you had a bad spar, you would get you get absolutely demolished over there. So never mind losing a fight of that magnitude in front of millions of people. The pressure he must be under right now, Tommy. And Tommy, let me tell you, Tommy's a lovely guy. He's a top guy.
Is he, yeah?
And I just wish him all the best. I just hope he can pull it off. He's a really good guy.
I think he's got a tough fight on his hands, though. I guess we are going to talk about it. I do because, you know, for all the jokes and everything that people might make at Jake Paul's expense, the guy's applying himself. He's doing the work. He's flying down to Puerto Rico. He's training in the gym. He's sparring with good people. And against Tyron Woodley, all right, it wasn't like an amazing performance. And Tyron Woodley wasn't that good either. Tyron Woodley never stepped on the gas. It was a typical Tyron performance. But Tyron is a world champion, you know, former world champion in the UFC, knows how to fight, knows how to control the pace and all the rest of it. And that's what he did. And when I saw Tommy Fury, with all the respect, no disrespect to him, but when I saw him against, I forget the guy's name, Anthony Pretty Boy Taylor. I think that might have been who it was, because I was there covering the Jake Paul Tyron Woodley fight for BT Sport, and I wasn't impressed. Now, I must say this, I was impressed with some of the earlier stuff I'd seen from Tommy Fury. I thought he looked explosive. I thought he looked still like a novice, but he looked like someone that had the promise to go on and become a really good boxer. But against that guy, that Anthony Taylor, who was pretty much an MMA fighter. I don't know. I just saw it just wasn't a good performance. And fair enough, we all have bad nights at the office here and there. But after seeing what Jake Paul did and after seeing what Tommy Fury did, I'm kind of leaning towards Jake Paul in that fight.
I have to defend Tommy a little bit on this one.
Of course, I get it.
Because he is my friend. But not only that, is I've sparred with a lot of high-level boxers. Most of them are sparred. Tyson Fury, Joe Joyce, Huey Fury, Nathan Dorman. You know, a lot of really high-level UK boxers are on, like, the world scene. And what boxers are used to is boxers. Yeah. They're not used to people diving in and throwing looping shots and tying you up and making it. They're not used to that kind of stuff. They're used to people coming at them with a 1-2 and a left hook and a right uppercut. So what I try and do when I spar conventional boxers is I try and mix it up and make myself as unorthodox as I possibly can, because most of the time it takes them a while to figure that style out. So I think that particular opponent was quite bad for Tommy because he wasn't a boxer. If he would have come at him with ones and twos and uppercuts and hooks and doing the conventional stuff, I think Tommy would have had a lot more success. But on that note, Mike and Mr. Harrington, I'm afraid I have to love you and leave you. After that tremendous breakdown, I gotta go, boys. No, I'm sorry.
You gotta go. I want you to go. I'm quite frank. You've overstayed your welcome, to be quite frank. I was like, where is this guy gonna go with his shitty wallpaper? Do you know what I mean?
Whoa.
No.
Leave off too far.
That was just a bridge too far. The straw that broke the camel's back, he's out of it. Hey, Tom, thank you very much. Appreciate you, man. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for taking the time. Love the wallpaper, by the way. We'll talk soon, my friend. Come and stay at my place anytime. Offer still on the table. Much love and respect. Take care. I'll be in touch.
Thanks, Mike. Get back to me. I'm still waiting for you to get back to me with the details.
All right, I'll get back.
I know you're a busy man. I don't want to be that guy who's pestering the busy guy. I don't want to be that guy. But you get back to me, Mike, when you can.
I'll be in touch. Okay. Thanks again, Tom. We appreciate it, mate. Great talking to you. And then there he was. future heavyweight prospect, Tom Aspinall. Thank you for joining us, Tom. Great guy. Always a pleasure to talk to him. But of course, the show must go on, as they say. Harrington, Mike Harrington, show yourself, my friend. There he is. We do have a fight card this weekend. The legendary Jose Aldo takes on Rob Font in an absolutely fantastic bout at bantamweight. It's crazy to think that Jose Aldo is still going to this day. You know, I mean, he was certainly one of the greatest featherweights of all time. And I think when I say one of, I think the conversation is either him or Max Holloway. Some people might think that's strange that McGregor is not in that conversation, but he only ever won the belt. He never defended the belt and he never went on and had a long run as champion. You know, so I think that kind of, whilst he was certainly a guy that made a lot of impact in the featherweight division, I don't think he qualifies for one of the greatest of all time. But what's the co-main event on that card? I should know this because I'm commentating it this weekend.
Brad Riddell versus Rafael Fiziev.
Ooh, that's a good fight. Brad Riddell, Rafael Fiziev. Fiziev is just an unbelievable kickboxer. But we'll get into that main event. You can give predictions, Harrington. I can't because I'm commentating, of course. This is a really good fight in the bantamweight division. I mean, it's crazy that Jose Aldo, you know, if he wins this fight, there's a possibility for him fighting for the belt pretty soon. Of course, the problem is that he fought Piotr, was it last year? Early, summer last year, it was on Fight Island, I called it, and he got beat down pretty significantly, to be fair. But if he beats Rob Font this weekend, who's he just beaten? He just beat Pedro Munoz. He beat Chito Vera. If he was to beat Rob Font as well, I mean, that's three big wins. And then, of course, when you factor in who Jose Aldo is, it wouldn't be crazy to think that this man gets a chance at the title again.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, I was reading something he said this week. The title isn't necessarily his next step off of a win for this. What he wants off of a win over Rob Font is a fight against TJ Dillashaw on the Petr Yan versus Aljamain Sterling card, because obviously Sterling has the belt held up. Nobody's getting a shot before Petr Yan. So in his mind, that makes the most sense. TJ Dillashaw is like the next man, like the number one contender in waiting. It makes sense for Aldo to fight him on that card.
And what a fight that would be. Jose Aldo, TJ Dillashaw, holy shit. You know, you just got to, honestly, Jose Aldo's one of those guys, you know, that when he comes in the room, you know, as I always say, we interview the fighters, you know, and one by one they come in and, you know, they're whatever. Jose has a presence about him. He does, you know what I mean? He kind of commands the room. And we saw some video this week. What's his name? The Hawaiian kid, Lewis Smolka. Lewis Smolka, he's fighting on the card at the weekend as well. And there was a video that UFC put out where he was just like in awe of Jose Aldo. And when we spoke to him at the fighter meetings, Lewis was like, you know, he said, oh man, I've watched this guy. He was like one of my inspirations for getting into martial arts, into mixed martial arts. And you just see the effect that Jose Aldo has and the reverence that people have for him. You know what I mean? And as I say, when he comes in the room, you know, me and DC, we've spoken to fucking all the fighters on the roster, you know, but DC himself is even still a little starstruck of Jose Aldo. And even me, normally I've got some stupid comment or whatever. You can't save it. It's like, no, it's Jose Aldo. I'm not going to talk shit. I'm not going to say something stupid. I'm not going to try and be funny. I'm just going to keep it, you know what I mean, to the facts, because he's that type of guy. He does command respect.
Well, yeah, it's got to be nearly impossible to like land a joke through an interpreter too. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
so hard. It's almost impossible. But anyway, so listen, the UFC do a really good job of giving us a ton of stats. And I'll just go through some of these. And it's surprising because when you look at the stats, and of course, if you're an odds maker, you go off stats. You know, you don't go off opinion, you go off numbers. And if you look at the stats, they do tend to lean in Rob Font's favor, because here we go. Average fight length for Rob Font is 10 minutes 25. For Jose Aldo, it is 16 minutes 22, right? So a shorter fight length, right? Knockdown average per 15 minutes for Font, 0.72. Aldo, 0.2. Strikes landed per minute, 5.58 for Font, 3.51 for Aldo. So he's trailing on all the stats so far. Striking accuracy, 43.7, 44 for Aldo. So he's slightly ahead there. Strikes absorbed per minute. So how many times you get hit per minute? Font gets hit 3.57 times and Aldo gets hit 4 times a minute. Striking defense for Font, he defends 61.7% of his strikes. Aldo defends 59.3. So a little behind, not much in it really. Striking differential, he normally lands 2.1 strikes, whereas Aldo's minus 0.54. Grappling, takedowns 1.2 for Font, 0.51 for Aldo. Takedown accuracy, 40% for Font, 54% for Aldo. Takedown defense, Aldo's going to be way higher here, 89% to 53% for Font. Anyway, there you go. Just when you look at those stats, pardon me, it does kind of paint a picture. It's very, very interesting. Of course, it doesn't have the X factor, experience and speed and stuff like that, because you can't measure that. But those stats, they are interesting because, as I say, the majority of them, they do lean towards Rob Font.
Yeah, I mean, especially I was shocked by the striking numbers, right? Like the what was it? Like over two more strikes per minute landed than Aldo. The striking differential is massive there. And then just how close their defensive numbers are, right? Like this just said to me in my mind that says Rob Font has a way bigger output than Jose Aldo. However, the one thing that does kind of give me hope, because I'm never betting against Jose Aldo, right? Jose Aldo's going in there, my money's going on Jose Aldo. That's how my brain works. The fact that he has that like almost 90% takedown defense, and Rob Font, you know, Rob Font does rely on that, what was it, like 2.8 takedowns per fight or something like that. You know, like if he's relying on those takedowns to be successful and those takedowns being successful to set up his strikes, that could give Jose Aldo like a completely different, you know, a strategy in this fight, like a different look than Rob Font is normally used to stuffing those takedowns.
Yeah, and I don't have it right here in front of me. Maybe you can look it up. But I think Rob Font's the taller guy and probably got the longer reach as well. Wouldn't surprise me. Go on.
1 inch height, 1 inch reach.
Okay. Oh, that's all. That's all. All right. That's interesting. Yeah, Rob Font, because let's remember, the last time we saw Rob Font was against Cody Garbrandt, right? And we know Cody is a beast. And Cody, all right, he had a fall from grace. He got knocked out a few times. Then he came back. He beat Rafael Assuncao and said he made some changes. Went up against Rob Font. And I'm a fan of Cody. But that night, Rob Font, it was tough. You know, if you were Cody yourself, it was fucking tough. But if you're a Cody Garbrandt fan, if you're a Cody Garbrandt's family member or girlfriend or whatever it is, it was a tough watch because Rob Font could not be denied that night. He was absolutely on fire. And the jab, he just pieced him up with that jab. So it's going to be interesting. I can't call it, but, you know, if I think you're going to pick Aldo, but who would you pick?
Yeah, I mean, Jose Aldo, according to oddsmakers right now, is like a slight underdog. You can get him at like, you know, between plus 120 and plus 130. To me, just that value, I'm never not taking Jose Aldo as an underdog. It just, you know, the betting history would tell me I'm making a ton of money if I put my money on Aldo as an underdog.
Yeah. But there you go. It's a good bloody fight. That's what it is. I'm excited. Listen, anytime Jose Aldo fights, you know what I mean? It's a shame for Jose Aldo because the one thing that he's almost remembered by casual fans is obviously getting knocked out by Conor McGregor in 13 seconds, which was a genius move by Conor. It was amazing, but he can't let that define Jose Aldo's career. It was when he lost his belt, though. Would it be awesome if he'd actually end his career by being bantamweight champion, wouldn't it? And he was talking, he's been training with the Marines in Brazil a lot. You know, he's been talking about training with the Marines boxing team from Brazil. Go on, you were going to say something?
Well, no, he had that, if you remember, in the Chito Vera fight. It looked like he had that like weird tattoo on his chest. It was actually like a sticker that was like the insignia of the Brazilian Navy or the Brazilian Marines who he had been working with. So it was cool to see them get a shout out in one of his fights.
Yeah, absolutely. And how cool is that, though, that the Marines of the country where you're from have taken you under their wing and they're fucking training you for a fight. It's pretty fucking badass. It really is. All right. So there it is. Jose Aldo.
I was going to say, just speaking of taking you under your wing, I would be remiss not to say Mickey Gall has an incredible fight this week against Alex Morono.
That's right. Friend of the show, Mickey Gall. Yeah, taking on Alex Morono. Tough fight, though.
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, Mickey obviously got it right his last time. He had the loss to Mike Perry and then, you know, came back with a win, looked incredible his last time out. Alex Morono, very, very, very active fighter. And this is, you know, this is no easy fight for anyone, certainly.
Yeah, no. Morono's really good Taekwondo black belt, good striker. Believe it or not, when you speak to Alex Morono, because he's got the shaved head and stuff like that, when you hear him talk, he is so intelligent. Not that I'm saying if you have a shaved head, you've got to be a fucking idiot. But I don't know. Just add don't know. You know, he's fighting in the UFC. He's got a shaved head. He's a fucking animal when he's in there. But then you hear him talk. The guy is very, very put together, very cerebral in his approach, studies a lot of tape. Alex Morono's a smart guy. It's a good fight. All the best, Mickey Gall. All right, today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers professional counseling done securely online. So if you feel that there's something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, then you definitely got to check out BetterHelp. Listen, I know personally, okay, when you speak about some of your problems, you know, they say a problem shared is a problem halved, you know, and it certainly helps. That's a fact. So whatever it is, and most of the time, I think that people are going through something. You know, everyone's having something that they're struggling with. Maybe it's insecurity, maybe something much more deeper than that. You know, for myself, I was having anger issues. I went and spoke to an anger management specialist, and look at me now. I mean, Jesus Christ, I'm a new person. But still, trust me, all jokes aside, whatever you're dealing with, BetterHelp has a wide range of counselors which are available to you. Plus, BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. And it is easy to get started. Once you sign up, BetterHelp will match you with your own licensed professional therapist who you can communicate with in just under 48 hours. It is not a crisis line. It is not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so it's easy and free to switch counselors if you need. Plus, you can message them at any time. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. So please, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. So it's the perfect way to do therapy during the pandemic, so you haven't got to go sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. So please, if you've got something that you need to discuss, if there's something that you've been thinking about, listen, there's no stigma attached to this, right? You really, if there's something on your mind, please. It's 2021. Being a man, keeping it all to yourself, that's a very old-fashioned approach. You will find that this really does help. Go to betterhelp.com/belief to join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. betterhelp.com/belief, BetterHelp, betterhelp.com/belief. You get 10% off your first month. Not a bad deal. 10% off, betterhelp.com/belief. Good luck on your journey. All right, where were we? All right, there we go. Brian, do we have any questions to end the show with, please, my friend?
We do have questions. I got one here from a Mr. Christian James.
Oh, Christian James, thank you very much. What a beard. Is that a beard?
It's short.
Holy shit. That is impressive.
What's up, everybody? Harrington, Bisping, guy kind of looks like Shawn Michaels. Here's my question. Do you think Max Holloway is onto a new way of sparring? His last three fights, he lost to Volkanovski. We saw what he did to Cater, which was ridiculous. And then in the last one against Yair Rodriguez, where he took substantial damage, went for takedowns, got the takedowns, and eventually secured the victory. He hasn't got hit in sparring for at least the last three fights. He does not physically spar anymore with contact. He simply does what he does. Do you think Max is onto a new way of sparring? Look what he did to Calvin Cater. Guy's ranked sixth in the world. He's having a conversation with DC and not getting punched in the face. With Yair Rodriguez, he took substantial damage. And I do believe if he would have had damage from training partners, I don't know if Max could have physically taken the damage from Yair Rodriguez. Because remember, he never got hit before Yair hit him. Bisping, do you think Max could be onto a new way of training? No contact for fighters who know how to fight. Obviously, everybody knows how to fight. But Max, compared to the guy who's ranked 35th, is a big difference. Love the show. Keep it up. Oh, yeah. And a bonus question for Harrington. Harrington, when Sean Strickland was on the podcast, you said when you were homeless, you had to fuck some gross women. Who's the grossest? Don't give me names. Give us details. Let's go. Fuck you, Harrington.
There we go. In fact, Harrington, let's start with that one. Let's keep it on the entertaining vibe. And Brian, what was that gentleman's name?
Christian James, he sends in questions occasionally.
Christian James, great question. Hell of a beard. And I like the bonus question. Harrington, who's the most disgusting? Well, you know, what's the worst experience of a sexual encounter that you've ever had?
I mean,
and that's not me asking. I would not dream of asking such a perverted question, but Christian James is a believer. We have to honor what he says.
Harrington has shame now because he lives with a lady.
Oh.
No, it's fine. I was actually telling her this story last night just because it was so funny. And
way
I,
to
I,
keep your girlfriend around.
Yeah, of course. You know, got to keep her jealous of stories like this. One night I was out at like a comedy club super late, just looking for a place to crash, obviously. And I got approached by a maybe 300-pound Australian woman who was about, 6 or 7 inches taller than me. She was a gigantic woman. And, long story short, struck out with everybody else at the bar. End of the night, we're outside, you know, she's smoking a cigarette. I'm like, eh. She's like, all right, hop in my car. And I went back to her place, and I had a warm bed to sleep in that night, but I slept next to a naked woman eating a sandwich that night.
Hey, listen, it is what it is. God bless you and God bless her. Maybe that was, what's her name? Is it Rebel Wilson?
Yeah, it may have been.
It might have been Rebel Wilson because she's lost tons of weight. Now, I saw on TV the other day, if you don't know Rebel Wilson, she's used to be a rather portly, larger, blonde Australian actress. She's lost tons of weight. She looks really good. All right, so Max Holloway.
Yeah, I was her rock bottom.
Yeah, there you go. Rebel Wilson slept with Harrington. She's like, that's it. I'm done. Right, mate, I got to lose some bloody weight. This is bloody ridiculous. Went to bed with bloody Harrington. No, Max Holloway. Yeah, so he hasn't been sparring for a little bit now. And this has been like, I remember when it first happened and he had I think it was the second fight with Volkanovski. I think that's when he first started doing it. And he was talking about it and he's continued to do so. You know, I commentated that Yair Rodriguez fight. And when we spoke to him, he said, yep, no sparring. And he said, which I kind of get, I kind of understand what he's saying here. He said, I don't need to spar. I don't need to prove that I'm tough. I don't need to prove how good I am to myself. He said, I've done all that. I've done the hard work. I've done the sparring. My timing is good. He said, we do what the Thais call a walkthrough. And if you go to Thailand, like I have, you do see them there. They don't spar hard. In fact, that's a really good point that he brought up because I don't think I've ever seen the Thais sparring hard. The Thais kick the shit out of pads. They kick the shit out of bags. And then they do what they call walkthroughs, which is kind of sparring, but it's very slow. Okay. So they kind of simulate a fight, but it's like a third of the speed, if that, you know. So Max likened what he was doing to that. And he said, I don't have the wear and tear on my body. He said, I've spent my life training, getting ready for fights, you know, sparring, doing boxing and kickboxing and all the rest of it. And listen, so far, he still looks great. You know, I was kind of worried for him going into the Yair fight because I thought, you know, Yair Rodriguez is a very unusual, peculiar style that he has. You know, it's a very original style for mixed martial arts. So maybe you wanted to spar with someone to replicate that kind of style to get your timing down. But he won the fight, you know, and he made some adjustments. He had a tough, I wouldn't say tough. I think he lost the opening round, but he made adjustments and clearly won the fight in the end. But I think he might be onto something because I think a lot of MMA fighters, because training for an MMA fight is really tough. It's one of the hardest aspects of mixed martial arts. Well, training for a fight is the hardest aspect of it, but the sparring is the hardest part. And, you know, my old boxing coach used to say, you've got to train the way you're going to fight. Because if you don't train the way you're going to fight, when you get into the fight, you're going to get tired. So therefore, you've got to put everything into it. But I guess when you're hitting pads, when you're running sprints, when you're doing your circuits, you can put everything into that. So you don't necessarily need to beat the shit out of one another. I always like sparring because for me, it was my most enjoyable part. But thank you for the question. I think that's a very interesting. It's interesting. I think if you spoke to some old school boxing coaches, they would tell you to shut the hell up. They would say, no, sparring is an essential part. And I'm kind of on that train, but I do think we need to do less sparring. You know, I think I used to spar too much. I used to do five minute rounds, Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning, every week, guaranteed. And that was probably too much. That's where all the injuries happen. You know, of course, injuries can happen in other parts of the training, but generally the sparring, you hit your head, you kick an elbow, you know, there's many, many different things. You maybe get cracked in the face and you fall over or they kick you in the stomach, they take you down, they land on top of you. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, thank you for the question, Harrington and Brian. Please, I'm all alone. I'm on my own. What are we saying? Talking into a microphone. You got any more questions?
Yeah, I got one here from Mr. Gage the Driver.
Oh, Gage the Driver. Look at this guy.
What's up? Gage the Driver here from South Carolina in my hot and sunny bedroom. Question for the count. You bring us Never Back Down Revolt. Where's Bisping Doc? We keep hearing about Bisping Doc, but we haven't got it yet. When will Bisping Doc be available in the U.S.? And also, I hear a lot about I've heard you mention your grappling match with Chael Sonnen, but hard to find anything on it. What happened? What were the results? How did it go down? Please let us know.
Well, Gage the driver, that is quite the get-up you have there. Quite the get-up from Gage. Never Back Down Revolt, you mentioned there. Go check it out. It's on demand or wherever you download movies from these days. Bisping Doc, it will be coming out soon. It has been in the works forever. I apologize for that. But it will be being released. Will be being released. Okay, too many Bs there. No, it's getting released soon. I am sworn to secrecy because, of course, when they want to release it, they want to do it with a bang. So I can't say anything yet. But seriously, within the next couple of months, it will be happening. I'm actually in the process right now of arranging all the press with the studio that's releasing it. And it's going to be worth the wait. So thank you for the question, Gage the driver. Harrington, are we still there? Are you around? Is he there? Is he gone?
I'm here. What's up?
There he is. There is. No. Just want to thank you for today's show. Thank you for always coming on and supporting and helping. Saw the finger. What do you want to say?
I was going to say, if the people are enjoying this show and they enjoy questions and want to send one in, head on over to bympod@gmail.com. Submit your questions, submit your video questions, submit, you know, some music you want to play on the show, whatever it is. We love hearing from you guys. If you enjoy the show and you're listening to it on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, just click that, you know, subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, click subscribe and the notification bell to get notifications every time we release a new video. And if you enjoy all this and want to get rid of all the ads and everything else, head on over to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get yourself a 7-day free trial and check out over 20 great shows on the network.
Very well said. The professional broadcaster that you are these days, Harrington. Well, listen, thank you very much to Harrington. Thank you to Brian. Thank you, of course, to Tom Aspinall. I'll catch his next fight soon. And thank you to you guys. We appreciate you. We'll be back with two more shows next week, Monday and Thursday, like clockwork guaranteed. Enjoy the fights. Enjoy your weekend. Talk to you soon.